You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast, the number one source for hunting and fishing information, strategy and tactics, as well as conversations surrounding conservation efforts and other outdoor activities in the great state of Iowa. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Iowa Sportsman Podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. My name is Dan Johnson. I'm your host. And before we get into today's podcast, I just want to remind everybody to go visit the Iowa Sportsman website, iowasportsman.com. They have a ton of great digital blog posts there about fishing, duck hunting, deer hunting. Everything that you love about Iowa is on that website, and it gives you the opportunity to sign up for their magazine as well. Get the subscription. Again, tons of great articles about everything that you love about Iowa. I'm really excited about mushroom hunting this spring, and we're going to be having another podcast about that topic coming up very shortly. If you haven't subscribed to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast yet, please do so. You can do that at iTunes or wherever you download your podcast at. Subscribe and then leave a 5-star review. That would be awesome. Now, today, we are joined, we're actually sitting in his living room on this beautiful spring day here in Iowa. We're joined by Ben Harshine. He works for Hunterra Maps, and he also works for Whitetail Properties as a real estate agent. And that's what we're going to be talking about today is purchasing land. And there's a whole big, details. We can go into tons of details, but we're going to keep it very high level today. And so, Mr. Ben Harshine, how are you, man?
Dan, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to talk land with you in front of the Iowa Sportsman's audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the first time we've ever had a land-based podcast on this channel. We've done a food plot podcast before, but never talked about, buying and selling land. And I think we'll just focus on buying land because I feel that purchasing land is one of those things that people automatically say to themselves, oh, there's no way I'll ever be a landowner. There's no way I'll ever be a landowner. It's impossible. It's too expensive, blah, blah, blah. So just on a real high level, why don't you tell everybody, maybe put some of those superstitions to rest that maybe it's not as hard as they think to be a landowner.
Sure. Well, history has proven itself that land over time, just for humankind, has been as sound of an asset to have and as safe of an asset to have as any other sort of investment. Land has held its value and steadily increased its value over time. And there really there's a lot of factors that go into it. One is of the largest, it's cliche to say they're not making it anymore, but yeah, that just simple, concept of supply and demand, has allowed land to be, one of the most sound investments that one can make. And, if you buy it right, some of the most successful people from a wealth standpoint have made their big gains with real estate purchases. Mm-hmm. So as far as, we're talking, this is the Iowa Sportsman's Podcast. So we're going to focus on land here in Iowa.
Yeah.
Midwestern farm ground and recreational land. There's some different markets and there's some different buyers, but to be honest with you, you don't have to be rich to buy land.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't really know where you'd like to start.
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is, budget, right? Budget is the most important thing to all of, you know, for all of us, right? I can't go right now. I can't go buy 1,000 acres. I want to, but I probably can't do it. So for all types of budgets, whether you're, you know, like a, just some average Joe who has an average job, and we're just going to talk law of averages right now. What are some of the first things that we need to do before we go out and start looking at purchasing land?
Yeah, the first thing you need to do is understand what your budget is. And the easiest way to look at that is determine, you know, how frequently are you getting paid? Let's say you're getting paid on a monthly basis, a salary job.
Yeah.
And you've got your bills throughout life, you know, your other bills in life. And okay, is there anything extra that's available that you could put towards a monthly payment? Mm-hmm. You can purchase land and finance land through a number of different ways, but the simplest is through a conventional loan. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of banks out here that almost all banks will work with people on financing land. So to understand what you can afford on a monthly basis or on a yearly basis would be the first step. And the second step really would be to understand what are your goals. Are you wanting a hunting property? Are you wanting a place that is going to provide additional income to you and your family? Is it a place where you want to just get away with the family for a weekend and enjoy the outdoors? Or are you wanting to buy something that you can get for a cheap deal or below market value, fix and sell, you know, in a short term time? So understanding what your goals are and then what you can afford are the very first two steps. One of the just basic, whenever I have buyers call me up and we talk about, you know, the land purchasing process, banks are going to want, a lender is going to want a down payment. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that down payment be anywhere from 20% down to 40 or 45% down. So if you buy a $100,000 property, you need to have $20,000 to $40,000 in cash to be able to put down, and then the lender would finance the remaining part of it, which would go into your monthly payments.
Gotcha.
With the interest rates right now around, say, we're talking beginning of 2019, our interest rates are around the low fives and up, depending on your credit score. So still relatively low interest rates compared to what history has shown us in the past, but they are increasing. That's another thing to factor in what kind of interest you're going to be paying in addition to the principal and everything. So understanding what your monthly payments, what you can take on is really the first step in all of this.
Would you say that the down payment and saving for that and getting that lined up is probably one of the biggest hurdles when going for a big move like this?
Yeah, it is. It is. That is something that you have to set the wheels in motion ahead of time, unless you can step into a larger amount of cash in the short term or sell some sort of, you know, say you've got a fancy truck and you want to, you know, you're okay with driving a cheaper vehicle and you are able to sell that truck for, you know, X amount of dollars more. And okay, I've got a nice little lump sum to start towards saving for that down payment. But yeah, the down payment is definitely the something that's going to be required unless you're going to be paying cash for a property. One other thing to consider though, and it's a tool that I've used for several of my clients now, and it's what's called seller financing. Mm-hmm. So essentially, there are sellers that may not be desirable to them to receive one big lump sum for their property all at one time, whether it be for estate purposes or for tax purposes or whatever the case may be. They want a steady flow of income. There are options to be able to do seller financing, and that's negotiable between you and I. So Dan, I've got 40 acres and you're interested in in buying it, and it's going to be $120,000, but you don't have, say, $40,000 to put down for down payment, but we would negotiate financing to each other. And essentially the seller is the bank. So that can get a little bit complicated, but it really there's no lender involved other than you making annual payments with the seller. It's kind of like a rent to own. So there are different tools out there that allow somebody to step into land investment or land buying easier than what you think.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Makes sense. All right. So, you know, once you've gotten, I don't know, once you've gotten the bank okay, right? Like your credit score is good enough. They're saying they're going to back a loan from you. What's the next step? I mean, is it just going into looking for properties in your area? I mean, is it, how far is the person willing to drive to go enjoy a piece of property? Mm-hmm. And the reason I ask this is, you know, I'm a deer hunter, mm-hmm. right? I want to someday own a piece of property where I can somewhat manage some of the, you know, some of the habitat and do a big enough, good enough job to where maybe I might have one particular buck stick around all year round, right? So I can manage that property. Is there a way, how do I put this the right way? Southern counties in Iowa are going to be more expensive, you know, if you want that primo hunting ground, right, compared to maybe some other places in the state, right? So do you think it would be a good idea to maybe not necessarily look right around where you live or potentially go further out from where you live because the ground might be cheaper?
Yeah, so let's just talk about we're buying a hunting property. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I would say the first thing to consider, once you have your budget figured out, then driving distances needs to be something you need to consider, you know,
right
in the beginning steps. I have some clients that have, that they own a farm over 3 hours away from where they live, and they make it work. That's 6 hours of driving every weekend if you go to your farm, or every other weekend. That's a lot of driving. So if it's just, you know, if you're game for that, and that's, you want to be in a very specific area and need to get that far, then that's fine. But I think that kind of sweet spot is around 2 hours or under for having a recreational property and still being able to go down and enjoy it relatively frequently.
Yeah.
The shorter driving distance, the better. If I'm an hour and change away, maybe I can slip down for an evening hunt and still come back home with the family. So driving distance is something to consider. As far as the land values or the price per acre right now and the market value of high quality, I mean, Southern Iowa, the best, arguably the best whitetail hunting in the galaxy, right?
Yeah.
So, as you get close to the Missouri line, we're farther away from Cedar Rapids, we're farther away from Iowa City and Des Moines. The larger population areas is what's the distance to those is helping drive the price per ground, in addition to the quality of habitat and the land management that's going on. But if you get really, if you're willing to go right to the Missouri line, that southern tier, you know, Appanoose and Davis County, Van Buren's got actually a little bit of a higher price per acre. There's been some big names and some big, you know, that have hunted and sold ground there over the years. But you get close to that Missouri line that's a little bit further, and you're going to see a little bit of a cheaper price per acre, somewhere around that $2,500 to high twos, maybe let's just call it 27, 2800 an acre averaging.
Yeah.
As you get closer, let's say Washington County is one of the counties I do a bunch of business in. We're within an hour of Iowa City, but we've got some tremendous whitetail hunting there, especially along the Skunk River. We're going to be looking at ground in the low threes per mm-hmm. acre. I mean, just for rough hunting ground. So, because of that proximity. So once you can establish what your budget is, okay, well, man, I would rather have more acreage, as much acreage as I can. Well, if you're willing to drive a little bit further, get down into deep southern Iowa, you're going to have a lot more choices as well, because there's a lot more recreational ground there as opposed to closer to the cities and, you know, where all the tillable land is as you go north from southern Iowa. But I guess that's kind of a roundabout way to answer your question. But there are a lot of factors to consider. That being said, once... this isn't land isn't just like an expense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an expense because there's money that's coming out of your bank account and it's constant, right? Mm-hmm. Just like a mortgage is.
Yep.
But land has held its value and increased its value for so long that in the event that you do need to, you need to step away from that, or you need to sell that property.
Yeah.
There's a really strong chance that is going to hold its value more so than a lot of other investments that you could be doing in life. So,
yeah.
I think it's scary for people because it can be a big payment, but, you sell a property in 5 years or 10 years and you're going to be making money off of it.
Right. What drives the cost per acre on a certain piece of land?
Yeah, great question. So one would be here in Iowa, there's obviously a lot of farm ground. Even in southern Iowa, there's still some quality farm ground. And the quality of that soil in Iowa is measured by the CSR2, corn suitability rating. And that there's a number of factors that go into that number, but it's a quantifiable number that says, hey, this farm ground, this tillable ground is this quality, you know, and your lowest, roughest quality, almost unfarmable soils are going to be in the 30s, and your flattest, blackest, most fertile dirt in Iowa is going to be in your 90s. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the most expensive. So this farm ground, it's a measurement of that CSR2 value and the ability to grow a good crop of corn, right, or soybeans. Other factors when it comes to hunting, timber value, is that timber comprised mainly of just hedge and locust and cedar thicket, which is really, from a marketable standpoint, it can be good deer habitat, but not from a marketable timber sale. It's not of really any value.
Yeah.
Compared to upland hardwoods, you got oak ridges and walnuts and more valuable trees. That can play a factor into the price per acre of timber ground.
Yeah.
Access is another one. How many different points of access do you have to this property? What's the huntability of it? That gets more into the weeds whenever you have a land specialist helping you try to find a piece of ground, sorting through the good ones and the not so good ones from an access standpoint is really important. Neighborhood, are you next? Is this potential property next to larger landowners that are managing for mature deer? Mm-hmm. Are they passing young bucks? Are they working together to try to have a strong mature deer herd? That certainly plays into a factor. And there's some relatively commercialized neighborhoods, especially in South Central Iowa, that are very big tracts of land that are owned by single individuals or families that, you know, you can have some big deer running around there consistently, and that's going to drive the price per acre up as well. So there are a good bit of factors. One thing we haven't even spoke about was, from an income standpoint, is the Conservation Reserve Program, mm-hmm. CRP. CRP is essentially a program that exists to maintain sound soil and water quality throughout all of this farm ground, and you'll have basically the best, most suitable land for CRP is highly erodible land. So instead of farming every corner of that field or every slope, some of these acres are allocated to the CRP program, where you plant into native grasses. And in exchange, it's on a contract period, say 10 or 15 years, where that landowner gets paid X amount of dollars. Typically, it's similar to the average cash rent, but it's from the government and it's consistent, yeah, income. So that can be a really good way to understand how much money you're going to be making from a property on an annual basis, but that also factors into the price per acre.
Right.
You know,
so. Right. And that's kind of a perfect transition there is, other than, you know, having your property in CRP, which the government pays you for, mm-hmm. right? What other avenues can you make money off your property?
Mm-hmm. Cash rent. Let's say you have tillable ground. You can either farm it yourself, You can simply rent it out to a farmer for X amount of dollars per acre on an annual basis, on a five-year basis, whatever your terms may be. You can custom farm it. So you essentially pay for all of the seed, pay for all of the chemical and the input, and you pay somebody to do, you know, to plant it and to harvest it, but you actually are able to take home the profit of that. Okay, so yeah. Those are a couple different ways from the tillable standpoint to make money. Timber sales. You can take marketable trees off of your property through the selling of logs. Hunting leases is another one. You can rent it out to pasture if you've got good fencing and quality areas where cattle can graze.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of ways that you can generate income off of it, but the most common ones would be, you know, hunting leases, farm ground, CRP. There are other programs called through the FSA office and the Natural Resource Conservation Center, which is in every county. There are different programs that are on a cost share basis as well. So there's a number of different programs that allow you to be able to offset your monthly or annual payments for your ground.
Right. So you take that into consideration, right? So now we're looking at your monthly payment is going to be the same, but you're bringing in, right? I always, whenever I try to set a budget, I try to set it like zero, right? I want to kind of get it as close to zero or above zero as possible, right? So bills and all that stuff are below zero. Other money I'm making is above zero. So if you can bring that expenses on that property closer to zero, you know, with a CRP program, cash running tillable, maybe having a hunting lease during, let's say I'm a bow hunter, so maybe I'd lease out during shotgun season mm-hmm. to an out-of-stater or whatever. Those are some things that will bring me closer to zero mm-hmm. that would, you know, say, okay, then you can look at it where, okay, it's not $500 a month. It's now $200 a month mm-hmm. because I'm bringing in this, you know, additional money throughout the year. And I think if people look at that, and not necessarily look at, hey, this is, it's X my bill for this land is X dollars, but you're also making income off of it. So it just kind of makes it, it's a little bit softer of a landing.
Yeah. So a good way to look at this ground that is bringing income is through what's would be considered the cap rate or the return on investment. Mm-hmm. So take your annual income that a property is bringing back to you. Let's say it's $10,000, and then you take your let's say it's $12,000.
Yeah.
Then your taxes on that ground every year are $2,000. So mm-hmm. your net income after taxes and all your other expenses is $10,000. Okay. And you buy this property is listed for sale, or you can buy it for $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, if you take $10,000, which is your net income, divided by the purchase price, $300,000, you're at a 3% return on investment. Okay. That 3%, if that number, the closer that number is to your interest rate, say it's 5%,
mm-hmm.
the closer it is to cash flowing it. Okay. So it's very difficult now. I mean, you can find them, but the properties that are bringing 5% and 6% return on investment that are literally paying for themselves. Mm-hmm. You put the down payment down and then the rest is in overdrive. Then those are pretty rare, but yeah. It still can be done. It still right. can be found. One other unique form of income here we should talk about. There's two windmills,
yep. Okay,
wind turbines. It's becoming very popular in the Midwest, and cell towers as well. I have a friend, it's getting paid almost $1,000 a month from Verizon because
yeah.
he has a cell tower on his farm. That's incredible. You know, and if you're okay with that, that's a great way to own a piece of ground and still, you know, not everybody can go and get a cell tower,
but right.
there are other ways out there to be able to generate money. So, if you can get that return on investment percentage closer to your interest rate, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I ran an amortization schedule. I basically created this formula in Excel when I was helping this one set of buyers try to find, okay, let's really look at the financials of this purchase, okay?
Right.
And there was a CRP, it was 80 acres of CRP. Well, it was an 80-acre tract, 40 was in CRP and 40 was in timber. Great hunting, but it also had a nice long CRP contract on it. The CRP expired and is going to expire in 2030. So there's a lot of years left on the CRP.
Mm-hmm.
It totaled out that once all those payments are made, is over $120,000, right? That'll be coming back from the government through the life of that CRP contract.
Yeah.
So I ran this amortization schedule where I basically punched in I punched in 35% down and, you know, a 5.5 interest rate. And then I also factored in my income the income on this property every year. And, if we did like a 15-year loan, basically we were going to pay for that farm within 8 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're making a 15-year loan is larger payments per month than a 20-year loan. You're probably not going to get a 30-year loan in land. I'm not a banker and I'm not a lender, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Farm credit, they'll do a 20-year loan, a little, you know, longer term than a lot of other banks. But what I'm saying is that, hey, you got to really dive into the numbers here because, I mean, if you could swing $1,000 payment per month for 8 years, you know, and then own a piece of ground free and clear that is now bringing in an extra $10,000 per year, man, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Absolutely does. So,
you know, and you can kill a couple good bucks on it, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, another long-winded answer for you. I tend to get that way, but I get excited whenever I start talking the land buying process with people. You know, there's a zillion questions, and the best advice is really to try to find somebody in your area that specializes in selling and buying ground.
Yeah,
and that's not a cut on your general real estate agent that helps buy and sell houses as well. But there are people like myself and others throughout the state of Iowa and throughout the Midwest here and the rest of the country that are very specialized in their local land markets.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're looking for farm ground, CRP, pasture, hunting ground, or a combination of all of them.
Yeah.
So that's who you pick up the phone and start a relationship with them. And hey, when you're a buyer, it doesn't cost you anything to have a land agent. You literally, I mean, unless you work out some strange deal, you know, that agent will earn their commission representing you trying to find another piece of ground, but it doesn't cost the buyer anything.
Right.
So that's can be the most valuable advice that you can seek when you're buying, you're wanting to step into land ownership.
So something that just popped into my head was going into a piece of property with a buddy or a friend or another family member. It's a way to reduce your price, but then you have that, you know, this is more of a personal question now. Would that be something that you would recommend doing, maybe going in with a buddy and sharing the cost and rotating in years or finding out a way to make it work with a buddy or another family member?
I have seen it go the polar opposites. I've seen it make, you know, iron tight brotherhoods, and land partnerships. It's essentially a business partnership, and I've seen it go a successful route,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen it shatter friendships and families.
Yeah,
and I've seen firsthand it destroy families whenever you have multiple people owning a piece of ground and trying to make decisions.
Yeah,
because yes, there's a couple things involved here. One is just the emotion of owning land and what you get to do on it. Hunting especially is a passionate thing for many, many people, and it can be a sacred thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sharing that piece of ground with somebody may not be for every person. It may not be for the majority of these listeners.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a great way, but it's a great way to get larger tracts of ground and be able to manage and make larger gains. You just need to make sure you're doing it with somebody you you trust and that you're going to be able to have the most difficult conversations with.
Yeah.
Let's say that you're in two different, you know, you're the best of friends, but you're in two different walks of life. One guy loses his job and he's not going to be able to make payments. You need to talk about that ahead of time. What if that happens?
Yeah.
Is your partner going to be able to buy you out? Or is there going to be some sort of big conflict there, you know, and talk about all the different bad scenarios that could happen and before you actually sign on the dotted line. But yes, land, I mean, partnerships can go great. It just needs to be, it's a relationship that's almost as, it's almost like marriage, to an extent. Maybe that's not the best way to compare it, but it's a very, it's a big thing to think about.
Right. So now we have, we've went to the bank, we've gotten approved, we've reached out to a land specialist. They're helping us try to find the perfect piece for not only our budget, but for our needs, whether that's, you know, to make an income off or maybe to use as a recreational piece with our family or whatnot. Is there any like cautionary tales or, hey, you need to make sure you watch out for this type of scenario because, you know, after you purchase this property, maybe you can't do everything you thought you could do on it.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually where having an attorney during the buying process, each buyer is most likely going to have an attorney that's doing a title opinion. There's a couple layers here. One is first when you're buying a property and you're working with a land specialist, they need to sniff out any issues that are going to be coming down the pike, whether it's a conflict with a neighbor, are the acres accurate, that are being marketed compared to what's actually inside the fences and legally described.
Mm-hmm.
Access. Yes. Is there recorded easement? Even though there's verbal, is there recorded easement? There's all those things a real estate agent is going to need to, if they're doing their job, they need to sniff that out for you and identify that for you. But once you get into a purchase agreement, then eventually there's going to be abstract work done, and that abstract, which is basically that is the history of land ownership of that parcel of ground, that will be reviewed by an attorney, and that attorney will give you a legal opinion on any issues that may arise. So there's always things that can come up, but as long as you've got a good team of people that are helping you throughout this land transaction, there shouldn't really be any surprises.
Okay. So, are there any other types of expenses that, hey, I got a piece of property, I want to buy it. Whose responsibility is it for, let's say, if there's any additional surveying work that needs to be done or insurance inspections? I'm thinking like when you go and buy a house, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have an inspector. You have to have certain insurance on it. You have to have, a variety of different things happen before you can buy the house. What about with land?
So with land, there's not... If there's a cabin on it, mm-hmm. or a house on it, you're going to go through the normal home inspection process. You're going to have somebody come in and inspect all of the parts of that house and cabin, every little thing that could go wrong, in addition to a septic inspection.
Okay.
That septic inspection will be able to satisfy what is called a time of transfer. Time of transfer is a requirement from the Iowa DNR that makes sure that all of these, any sort of septic system, sewage system, is up to code before it transfers to the next owner. Okay, so if there's a septic tank on the property, that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That will satisfy one of the required documents during closing, which is called the groundwater hazard statement. That groundwater hazard statement is a checklist or a questionnaire for the transferor to answer if there's underground storage tanks, obviously the septic system, a number of other things. So that's one of the inspections that we come across often with land, is if there's a septic system on it. But as far as surveying, a lot of the land here in Iowa is you know, it's described through sections and quarter sections and quarter sections. And there isn't a ton of surveying that needs to be done, at least here in the Midwest, because we've got a lot of north, south, and east-west lines that run basically along fence lines mm-hmm. and whatnot. I mean, I've been through some surveys here where they carve off the parcels in a unique way for a number of different reasons, and that survey is typically paid for by the seller,
yeah,
and then agreed upon by the buyer. And that agreement is written out in the purchase agreement. And typically that land will now be paid for at a price per acre standpoint.
Gotcha.
So what happens if you're buying $10,000 an acre ground and you guys, you think that you're buying 112 acres, but the survey comes out to 113,000 or 113 acres.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you're paying an extra $10,000 for, so you need to, The survey and the price per acre needs to be talked about initially during the purchase agreement. But I'm trying to think of other inspections. There's really the land transaction is relatively more simple than a home transaction, because
right.
there's a lot of negotiation back and forth of the home, you know, remedy this, fix that. And with ground, it's typically you're buying it as is.
Right. So what about property taxes? Is that included in your monthly payment, or what happens when that is, you know, when your loan is paid off and now you own land free and clear? Property taxes are still coming, right?
Yeah, they are. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You can lump them together in an escrow, but typically it's paid, you know, Iowa taxes are paid in arrears, which I would need a dry erase board to show the listeners, you know, how that actually works. But essentially you're paying for, you know, what we pay here in March was for whenever we owned it last.
Gotcha.
The back half of last year. So taxes will always, you know, even if you own the land free and clear, taxes are always coming. You pay them twice a year. And that's something you certainly need to budget.
Right. Is that based on a price per acre? Like how does property taxes work? I mean, because are you paying the same price per acre as someone, let's say, whether you own 10 acres or whether you own 1,000 acres, right? I know that the person paying 1,000 acres is going to pay more because they have more, mm-hmm. but is it a statewide average?
No, it's not. It's at the county level. The best conversation to have here in Iowa would be to go into the county assessor site, go into the courthouse, go into the assessor site, and they assess the value of land that determines the tax on that parcel.
Right.
So if you look at a 120 acre farm,
mm-hmm.
it's probably going to be 3 40-acre parcels.
Okay.
40 acre tracts of ground, and each of those 40s are going to have their own taxes per year.
Gotcha.
Okay. And then you lump it all together and you know, that's your payment for, you know, for the farm for that half of the year. But really what factors the most into the taxes of that property is the income, the ability to generate income.
Gotcha.
So if you've got high quality farmland, that 40 is going to be taxed higher than if it's 40 of timber. And other factors are, you know, if it's in a good school district or if it's in an expensive county, like here we are in Johnson County, and this is an expensive county to live in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on here from a local economy, and the taxes are higher here than they would be down in Appanoose County.
Right.
You know, Decatur County. So, the taxes are you know, and they'll, when reassessments happen, people, you know, typically, is everybody happy whenever there's a new tax assessment
right.
that goes on, you know? So it's definitely something you need to consider, though. It'll be here forever. This is
yeah.
America.
So. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that you can think of that you need to share with the listeners about, you know, purchasing land that we already haven't covered?
And I think that there's a... we could go on for a long time about the process of buying a property and what the market is right now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different factors, and I mean, unless you got anything more specific, I would say that if you are serious about wanting to own a piece of ground someday, I guess I'll tell a story here. So I started Huntera Maps. We make custom maps for hunters and landowners. I've started this business 9 years ago, and I've met a lot of big landowners throughout the country through it. And I've established some great relationships with some of them. And the common factor, I talked to a guy that owns 1,200 acres in Western Illinois, amazing hunting grounds. Like, man, how did you get here? The common theme is that everybody wishes that they would have started sooner, even if they started in their 30s or were in their 20s. Step into it, whether it's 20 acres or 30 or 40 acres, whatever you can afford. Don't think that you have to find the absolute perfect piece of ground if you want to own land long term. Figure out what you can afford and go do it. It can be a sound investment. When you're working with the right person, they're going to help you not buy something overpriced, mm-hmm. and they're going to help you navigate a sound property to buy that's going to meet you and your family's and your budget's goals.
Yeah.
That would be the biggest piece of advice I would say is, try to find somebody that is going to be an asset and an ally to you, and trust the fact that land ownership has been such a sound investment, for Americans for generations.
Right.
I guess I'll leave it at that.
Perfect. All right. So the other thing is you are a real estate agent for Whitetail Properties, right? Mm-hmm. So if anybody has any questions maybe about buying, selling land, or maybe they even want to use your services, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. So I like to talk on the phone. My phone number is 319-853-1162. You guys can check out some of the current listings that I have or what I've sold in the past at whitetailproperties.com. You can just either go into the Iowa agents list there or look me up. I can help people buy anywhere throughout the state, and I focus on selling ground primarily in Southeast Iowa.
Yeah.
So, feel free to get a hold of me, and if I'm not the right person. Whether it's somebody's listening from Iowa that's more on the western side of the state, I'm going to point you towards somebody that is a professional in that area of Iowa, or if it's somewhere else in the country, or if it's in my wheelhouse, I'd love to help you out, or just at least talk through land ownership and that process with you.
Right, right. And the last thing is, you are also the owner of Huntera Maps, like you mentioned. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, they make some really kick-ass maps. And I have this magnet map, the Magna map, right behind my computer. And when I should be doing work, I'm staring at it, thinking about tree stand locations and moving these little magnets around. So if you need a kick-ass map of your property, where do we need to send them?
Yeah, Huntera.com. We make custom maps for hunters and landowners. I started that company, like I said, 9 years ago. Whitetail Properties was my first corporate account. I started working with them back when they were a much smaller brokerage, and they've we've grown our businesses and brands together, and now I'm able to represent Whitetail Properties in Southeast Iowa, and it's all kind of come full circle there. So I'm excited for anybody that wants to call and talk about maps or land. I'll be ready.
All right. Mr. Ben Harshine, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Dan.